From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on Sunday, May 1st, when the White House confirmed that President Obama's oldest daughter, Malia, would be going to Harvard, but only after taking a gap year. The New York Post called it, quote, the ultimate sign of luxury. The New York Times wrote, quote, it sounds awfully nice, a year-long postponement of schoolwork, end quote. But the Times' description of the gap year rubs some families the wrong way. Here's how the Times described a gap year, quote, the idea is that university-bound students go on an adventure, do something meaningful, and, if all goes to plan, arrive at campus a year later, more mature, focused, and attuned to their goals, end quote. Yes, for some, a gap year is a benefit of privilege. For others, a gap year can be about working, making and saving money, and more than ever, trying to decide if college offers a good return on investment at all. It's not always about traveling the world, backpacking across Europe. It's about carefully assessing options. This hour, a conversation about gap years. Positives, negatives, perhaps, and your feedback as well. Let me go ahead and welcome my guests. In studio here, in our Rochester studio, WXXI, is John Serafine. He's the lead counselor at Fairport High School. And John, nice to see you.
Thank you, Evan.
And Emma Milligan is in here. She is, I say, fresh off a gap year, still sort of. Recently took a gap year. Fair enough?
Yes, I'd say so.
Nice to see you. Thanks for being here, Emma. In our Geneva studio, WEOS in the Finger Lakes, is Heather Grasso. She is a school counselor at Geneva High School. And Heather, thank you for taking the time to join the program as well.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with going around the panel, asking for definitions. And John, you know, it's a term, I don't know if you hear it more often now than you did 5, 10, 20 years ago, but how do you define it? If a parent or a student brings it up, what's a gap year?
Well, I think we do definitely hear it more so now than we did 5, 10 years ago. I think a gap year can be defined in a variety of ways. I think most people think of it as a luxurious year off where, you know, the elite can travel the world and backpack across Europe and pay $30,000 and be involved in some organization that that lives by the gap year rules, I guess. But it can be a variety of things. And it can be volunteering. It can be working. It could be adventurous. It can be, you know, pursuing some interest that you otherwise may not have a chance to pursue.
Okay. So not necessarily limited to the privileged, correct?
I don't believe so. I think there's a perception of that. And, I think once you jump off that academic treadmill, people are concerned as to, you know, where are you going and will you ever get back?
All right. Heather Grasso, how do you define a gap year?
Well, I agree with what John has said. I think it's by individual. It's definitely, I look at it as a self-awareness period and to set some strong goals. And as long as they have a lot of planning in place, they can do, you know, like John said, go to work. They can take travel trips. And there's a lot of accredited agencies out there that fund those trips for not only the privileged, but other kids that are interested.
Emma Milligan is someone who took a gap year and had a lot to consider. So I want to ask you, first of all, why you decided. Kind of tell us a little bit about your story and how that kind of played out.
Okay. So, my story, I've been homeschooled since I was in second grade. And around 15, my parents and I made the decision that I was ready to take some college courses. So I went through Monroe Community College and I got my associate's degree the year I turned 18. And right after, I graduated from high school, technically. And so after that period, I mean, I'd crammed so much learning into such a small space, I feel like. And so we talked a lot, and I decided instead of going on and finishing my bachelor's degree, I wanted to take a gap year and kind of feel out myself and figure out what I wanted to do with my life and if continuing my education was a part of that.
Okay. And for people who might have had the reaction of assuming that meant, you know, you were a child of privilege or luxury wealth and all this. Yeah. I know you have a different reaction when it comes to gap year and,
yes,
you know, sort of that narrow definition.
I mean, I think my dad was functionally unemployed at the time. So we were definitely not living in privilege. We were struggling financially, but it was more important for me to kind of be figuring out what it was like to work and what it was like to interact with the real world, not necessarily in going out and backpacking through Europe, but to be working and to be saving money and getting my license and doing all these things that I hadn't yet and experiencing connections with other adults in the real world. So.
What was the most valuable sort of knowledge that you gained that helped you decide whether you did want to go on and pursue more education?
That's a hard question. I think I saw so many of my friends graduating from college because I had a large group of friends that were older than me, and they were struggling to find jobs, and they were struggling to find their way in the world, and they were being thrust out into real life with no idea how to do much but, you know, cook ramen noodles and struggle over tests and things like that. And so I was feeling like I needed to build up as much experience as I could. And looking at the career path that I was looking at, college wasn't necessary for that. And making that investment in college wasn't necessary. That may change. I'm always open to that change. But at the time and to this day, it's not a part of my path as I see it. So.
Okay. I want to bring in another guest who is on the line with us, and that's Ethan Knight, the founder and executive director of the American Gap Association. Ethan, thanks for taking the time to join the program. How are you?
I'm very well, actually. Oh, well, truthfully, I'm just getting over some sinus infection, so I'm sorry if that's coming through on my voice, but thank you very much for having this topic.
No problem, and you and me both, brother, no problem on that. Now, why don't you let the audience know what your organization is, the American Gap Association?
Sure, yeah, our organization, we're an all-volunteer-run nonprofit. Our primary role is as an accreditation and standard-setting organization for gap years, but the majority of our work really falls into four main categories. So advocacy, standards and accreditation of gap year providers, research, and then socioeconomic parity. It's one of our primary goals is to gain access to federal financial aid dollars for more students to be able to take a gap year.
All right, so that's an important place to kind of start the conversation with you, Ethan, because as you've heard from our other guests, yeah, there's this idea, look what the New York Post wrote, look what the New York Times wrote. There is a tinge of privilege or an expectation that anyone who takes a gap year, you know, there's only a small percentage of the population that could afford that. So is that true? And it sounds like your organization is at least trying to broaden the availability.
I'd say that it's here's my thing is that I think if you have more affluence, more wealth to you, all that does is that expands your choices. That's not to say, though, that there aren't some phenomenal gap year experiences to be had, both on the low sort of cost side of things and also just through availing yourself of existing scholarships. We found in an internal survey of gap year providers, they gave all away almost $3 million last year in needs-based aid. The trick is, though, that you have to ask for it. And so not all of them have a formal scholarship procedure in place, if you catch my drift.
Sure. All right. So let me ask the school counselors. When students are coming to you, and John, you said it's coming up more often, this question about a gap year. There is an assumption that people in your role are not direct, are telling students don't do this. And I don't know if that's fair or unfair, but here is what NPR found. They interviewed a guy by the name of Jeffrey Salingo, who is the author of There Is Life After College. And he told NPR, quote, guidance counselors who are usually evaluated by how many students they send right on to college rarely recommend a gap year for that reason. And parents worry that their kids will take a permanent detour and skip college altogether. So the fact that one of the first daughters, Malia Obama, is taking this route could give the gap year the attention it deserves. Back up to the first part of that. Guidance counselors usually evaluated by how many students they send right on to college, yes or no?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all. I work at Fairport High School. We happen to send about 92% of our kids off to college. I don't receive merit pay based on the number of kids go off to college, nor do I get demoted if fewer go off to college.
I was wondering where that came from, that Salingo telling NPR that. I mean, look, I'm certainly not questioning him. I don't know where that research comes from, but I had never heard that.
No. Like I said earlier, the gap year is a relatively new concept for most American high school students. And, you know, as a result, I think it's probably a relatively new concept for high school counselors also. But I think it's one of a variety of options that kids have. I mean, I would never be in a position or want to discourage someone from that option. You know, I tend to think it's an incredible option for a lot of reasons. You know, the financial, aspect alone is causing a lot of families, you know, to step back and take a good look at the value, you know, in the return on investment of college. So that might be a forced gap year, if you want to call it that.
Sure.
But, you know, a lot of people are, you know, taking a step back and evaluating, is it worth it or is it not worth it? And I think if you were to, have a college admissions representative on this panel, I think they would say to you that they're fully in favor of the gap year, because what they're finding is that the kids who, after a gap year, choose to go to college. You know, they arrive on campus, you know, more mature, more focused on their academics. You know, there's studies that say that those kids who've taken a gap year, their grade point averages are higher than those who didn't. I think they're more socially ready to live on a college campus. You know, we were talking earlier, this this whole concept of college readiness, you know, how do you define that? You know, I think we're a little bit guilty of defining college readiness by someone's ACT score or their SAT score. But there's a lot of pieces to go into what makes someone college ready. And I think, like I said, I think kids who take a gap year tend to holistically be more college ready than most of those who don't.
To John's point, Harvard has seen a 33% jump in just the past few years in the number of incoming students taking a gap year. And now dozens of other colleges and universities advertise the option right there on their website. The Ivy League schools essentially are advising students, you want to do it, we support it. So it is becoming more commonplace, sort of more accepted. And Emma Milligan, you decided again not to go to school. So your gap year, it just became the rest of your life. But had you decided to go to school, do you think you would have been more ready for it given that gap year you took?
Oh, yes. Definitely. I mean, it gave me a lot of time to gain a lot of knowledge, and it gave me a break. I mean, one of the things that I felt from being homeschooled and going into college after being homeschooled, even a community college, was that I had an eagerness to learn because I had been kept kind of out of that environment of school and that compulsory learning. And so I had an eagerness, and I was going home and I was looking things up after classes, and I had an interest in what I was learning. So I think gap years give you some clarity on what you want to be learning, and they give you some eagerness to be sitting down and to be kind of, your brain turns into a sponge again. I would say that was, you know, that was where I was at the end of my gap year, was I was eager to learn things.
So Heather Grasso, who is a counselor at Geneva, when you talk to students and families about gap years, what are the good reasons? Kind of take me through the list when a student says, what are the reasons to consider this? What would you tell them?
Well, I think that they have to remember they have options. Most of their peers end up going to college, so they think that naturally they just have to follow them. But I really try to help them be unique in what they want to do. So it really is by a student-by-student basis, but it really helps them think about what they want to do in their future. One of the most common things that my seniors struggle over is, I don't know what I want to do for the rest of my life. What am I going to major in? I'm going to spend all this money for college, and I really don't know if this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. So I feel like a lot of my experience has been seeing students being very overwhelmed with this and getting really caught up with that part of the college application process. So I certainly have had students that take gap years, and there's specialized programs that I have worked with to help make that become a reality.
Ethan Knight from the Gap Association, the American Gap Association, is this more common in Europe? Do Europeans tend to take some time off before going on to higher education?
Well, I mean, very much so. I mean, honestly, the concept originated out of the UK, and our best estimate, honestly, we don't have real quantifiable data on this, is that roughly 1% of U.S. college-bound students are taking a gap year. To juxtapose that, in the UK, on the other side of the pond, roughly 30% of the students who are college-bound are taking a gap year. What we're also seeing is in countries like Germany, the UK, like I mentioned, and Australia, the gap year is coming on very strongly, albeit probably of more of an independent nature. And we're also seeing it come on recently. I've just been in contact with an organization who's trying to set out similar goals as to what AGA does here in the States. In Singapore, in China, and in India are three other countries that we're watching more and more students really sort of become enamored with the idea for some significant benefits that we've already been listing.
I already see some questions that have come in via email and via Twitter. You can find us on Twitter at Evan Dawson, or our producer, Megan Mack, at MMack Media. And the phone's ringing. We're going to get to your phone calls in just a moment. It's 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255, or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. I'll start with Rachel in Rochester, who wants to join the conversation. Go ahead, Rachel.
Hey, Evan, thanks so much for having this conversation today.
Sure.
I'm the director of the Rochester AmeriCorps program, so we heavily are excited about the gap year for students coming straight out of high school and even some in between their college education. Serving a year in a national service program can be such a great way, like your other guests have mentioned, to strengthen your skills. In the case of AmeriCorps, to also earn money for college. After you successfully complete a full-time term of AmeriCorps, members earn an education award in the amount of $5,575 to be able to further their education or pay back their qualified student loans. And it gives them a really great way to be able to give back to the community, learn about what they want to do in the future, and be prepped for that next phase in their educational career.
Okay, so what do you want to make sure our listeners take away from this conversation, Rachel, what in terms of what's available?
AmeriCorps is available nationwide, so there are 80,000 people serving in AmeriCorps right now, so if you're looking for a fun adventure, you could do that. But we love it, especially when people serve our Rochester community. And here at Rochester AmeriCorps, we are currently recruiting members for our 2016-2017 term of service that's going to start on September 12th. So if you've got any gap year listeners out there, we'd love for them to apply to our program. We are serving the Rochester City School Districts and pre-collegiate programs, and we also do a little bit of work at the Department of Health and Human Services.
Okay, so one more time, where to find you?
RochesterAmeriCorps.org.
Thanks for calling the program, Rachel. And if you missed it earlier, Ethan mentioned the fact that their organization is an accreditation organization. I want to hit a couple of questions that have come in before I come back to your phones, which have blown up. A lot of interest in conversation about the gap year, which is great. I think there are a lot of sort of interwoven issues, not the least of which is the cost of higher education, which we can kind of come back to as well. And I'm seeing some comments on that. But a couple of quick questions that have come in. Stacy is asking, do all colleges allow this? In other words, if you get into a college and then you tell them you want to take gap year, will they automatically allow it? John?
Yeah, well, most colleges will allow you to defer your acceptance. So if you've I think it behooves kids to apply while they're in college when they have the resources there, their counselor and their school, to go ahead and apply. And once they've been accepted, most colleges will allow you to defer. But colleges are going to ask you questions. They want to know what you're going to do in that gap year. So, you know, it was mentioned earlier, I think the well-planned gap year is well-received. You know, the unplanned gap year, it, you know, begs some questions. Is, you know, what are you planning on doing during this 12-month sabbatical that you're taking?
There's also no reason that you cannot apply after, like during your gap year to go to college, you know, instead of applying during high school to go to college. So.
Okay, very good. And we had, on the accreditation side, we had some questions on that. So Ethan Knight's on the line with us, who is the founder and executive director of the American Gap Association. You heard Rachel talking about AmeriCorps. What should parents and students know about accreditation if they're concerned about that when it comes to gap year planning, Ethan? Mm.
Well, just to be clear, there's accreditation that's college credit bearing, which is the direction that we're trying to take our organization's members. And then there's our version of accreditation, which is mostly just to demonstrate that an organization has run through a litany of best practices that have been established in the outdoor ed world, the international ed world, the higher ed world, all really with the a few primary focus points in mind, first and foremost being safety. Having an experience, be it international or domestic, where you come back irrevocably changed in a positive way, obviously is the aim. In a negative way, can be a consequence of poor planning. And so what our best recommendation, if you're going with an organization that is not AGA accredited, or certainly AmeriCorps, deserves the same quality of recognition that accreditation would, by and large, I would encourage families to really dial in. If volunteering is a very important component of the project, you really have to do your research. I would encourage you to look at what badges and credentials they have. It's very easy to do volunteering irresponsibly with regards to sort of good intentions, but maybe having a negative impact on the local host community. As well as pre-departure preparation, that's something to be considering. Mental health concerns, who are the staff that are going to be overseas? Ultimately, at the end of the day, if you're working with an organization, that staff person on the ground is going to be the person responsible for that student. And so you want to make sure that they have a good, robust process of checking these individuals out. Hopefully you can read some resumes. And then probably the most important suggestion I could offer would be to contact previous students who have come before you for that particular program. It's not uncommon that a student will go on a volunteer program in a particular region of the world and, in essence, through that volunteer program have a great experience, but another organization, the same organization in another location might have a very different set of circumstances and results. And so contacting students who have come before in that particular program at that particular location, hopefully within, you know, the last year, I think would be my best point of advocacy.
And Ethan, remind our listeners where the American Gap Association is online.
Certainly. You can find us at americangap.org.
Okay, so a lot of resources there. Back to the phones we go. Bob in Mendon is next up. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi, I graduated high school in 87, so I took a gap year. I went immediately to college, lasted a semester, took a year off after that, and it was kind of before gap years were known as gap years. I think my parents called it, what the heck are you doing? but I traveled, and I didn't travel overseas. I bought an inexpensive motorcycle and went cross-country and camped all the way across. And I learned a bunch of different things that I would have never learned in school. And one of them is all the things that I saw that I really liked, in order to obtain any of them, I needed an education. So when I came back, I took up a couple different jobs before going back to school. And the same thing, I mean, it's a relatively low-level job that you're going to get right out of high school without a diploma for the most part. So when I finally did go back a year and a half later, I was on Dean's list. I did exceptionally well. I took it much more seriously. And I think it's a fantastic idea for anybody who's just not quite sure if they're ready. That's really the indicator for me. If you're not quite sure, you're probably not. So I would highly recommend it.
Bob, thanks for the phone call. First of all, it's a great story. Second of all, Bob's story should assuage some of the concerns that parents may have, and I'm sure Ethan's group has heard it, and I'm sure the school counselors have heard it. Parents may be concerned that if my child does a gap year, they're never going to go on and go back and take a test. Now, Emma Milligan,
yes.
I remember when I took the last test, and I remember walking out of that room at Ohio University thinking, mm-hmm. I will never have to take a test again like this. And it's a great feeling.
Yes.
It's a feeling of accomplishment. It's a feeling of relief. Do you think you could have gone back to that, you know, after your gap year? I mean, because you had that same sort of feeling that, you know, I don't have to do anything like that.
Yes and no. Of course, I'm open to that possibility, you know, eventually, someday. I hated it. I really did. I'm being completely honest here. And so when I got done with that, you know, I was very convinced for all the time that I spent at MCC that I was going to finish my bachelor's degree and that I was going to get it done. And the secret that people don't want you to know is that once you have a taste of real life, you don't really want to go back to that. You know, it's hard and it's challenging in many, many different ways. But at least for myself, I much preferred it. You know, I much preferred the process of working, of, you know, interacting with the world in that way on my own, to having a school kind of that I was moving through.
Which may be a commentary on our reliance on standardized tests as such,
yes,
big pegs in education, that students don't want to go back to a world where they're constantly taking tests, but you may still want to go back to a world where you're learning a lot.
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's okay. Never a question. I mean, I continue my education,
yeah,
every day.
I mean,
and it's self-directed. And but, you know, the idea of having grades and having numbers define who you are, once you are free from that system, you kind of don't want to go back.
All right, so that was Emma's choice, but let me ask John and Heather. You know, you've talked to students who make this decision. Most of the time, I imagine if they go in with a gap year plan and they have accepted going to school, where someone like Emma is kind of assessing the landscape, making decisions, you can apply from there if you want, you can do something else if you want. But for students who have applied, they've been accepted, John, for parents who are worried they'll never go back to school, a lot of them do, of course, they go back to school after a gap year, yes?
A lot of them do. A lot of them change their minds when they're during their gap year about what they want to major in college, what college they want to go to. I've seen that happen a lot also. And I have seen people have decided that, you know, a gap year turns into a couple of gap years or, you know, a gap decade, whatever. But I don't, you know, I think that, you know, the whole concept of learning while not being evaluated, you know, about your learning is a novel concept to people, and it feels good. And I think a lot of kids enjoy that, you know, when they're not tied to, like you said, a standardized test or an evaluative measure of some sort. But yeah, I think that's a, you know, the conservative fear is, you know, from a parental standpoint, I think if you have your mindset where, you know, my son or daughter is going to go to high school, then he or she's going to go to college, then he or she's going to get a job, and all of a sudden, if you know, you stop pedaling, the fear is this is going to break down someplace, and there go all my well-laid plans.
And Heather Grasso, who is a counselor at Geneva, I imagine the way to circumvent that is to have a plan when you go into a gap year, you know, or at least have some sense of structure. That a gap year is not a year off from everything. You know, it's not sleeping in every
right.
day. You know,
no.
That if you're not going to school, maybe you're working, maybe you are traveling, maybe you're volunteering, but you're not doing nothing.
Absolutely. I just actually, ironically, just got an email from one of my Rotary Club travelers who he went to Germany for a year, and he deferred admission to actually HWS, and he happily reported to me that he starts this fall at HWS as a freshman, and that he loved his experience abroad in Germany. And then a couple years earlier, I had another student who went to Switzerland and also did the same thing and went and now is in college, and they decided that that's what they wanted to do after all. So it was good to hear from them.
All right, Jennifer and Geneseo has been waiting. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi, I'm just so excited you guys are talking about this because we've been in my family talking about this with our daughter who's graduating this year since she was 13. And actually, her present when she was 13 was a gas box to start saving her money. And she's
wow.
made about $3,000 worth of money so far. And she's heading for her gap year, although we're calling it a bridge year because we feel like we're not throwing her into a gap. She's bridging her experience from, you know, high school to what she wants to do for the rest of her possible life, although she may change her mind a million times over again, which is fine. But she's going to be going off in September. Luckily, we have family in both Austria and England, and so she's going to be going and spending time with them and be volunteering with refugees, and she's going to be working in a Austrian museum, helping them move and place new art. And so she's lucky that we have connections, and we could set up her kind of gap year for her. But I'm just so excited this is being talked about because I sit on the school board at my school, and I just wish it was more of an option. It was talked about more with students of you don't have to go right to college. If you, like one of your panel said, if you're not ready, you're not sure, there are other things to do, and it's okay. And I wish parents could hear that message, you know, that it's okay. It's okay that they take a break.
Jennifer, well, let me ask you a couple questions based on that then. First of all, from your perspective on the school board, or at least in the school, the broader school community, is there a stigma with the gap year, or is it are you essentially saying that it's not talked about very much because so much of the conversation is, well, when you go to college, or, you know, got to go to college?
I don't think there's a stigma as much as it, yeah, as there's this mindset. We hear all the time with all this testing and standardized testing, Common Core and everything, you know, to get our kids college and career ready. Get them college and career ready. And so our mindset from a very young age is get them ready for college. And so that's where the school's mind's at. That's where a lot of counselors' minds are at, because the school and the board and the state ed department are pushing that route, you know, to get them ready, to have them be in STEM courses and, you know, get out there and get to college and then get a good degree and get a good job and, you know, be a producer for our country, which is great. But I think there are kids that first of all, they're not going to go to college. They're going to be maybe in the trades, and that's fine. They can be in the trades. We need good trades people. We need people
sure.
to fix our cars and do our plumbing. But we also have kids that are just not quite sure yet, and that's okay. They've been in school for all these years, and they just maybe need a break to find themselves a little bit and figure out, you know, who they are away from their families and their school and their, you know, their community.
It's a time to decompress.
And maybe have a better idea where they want to go next.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what Emma Milligan has been saying about her own experience having taken a gap year. And so when it comes to your own daughter then, Jennifer, you talked about it at the age of 13, you got kind of a gap year box. You started the conversation. At any point in the intervening 5 years, has she said, you know what, I think I do want to go to college right away. Or, I, you know, a lot of my friends are. I think I would like to do that. Has that ever come up?
Oh, let me tell you, it's gone back and forth. Primarily, I think at the beginning of this school year, she kind of, you know, was on the, she had a moment, a couple moments where she's like, I don't know, everyone's going. Should I go? You know, do I have to go? And we just kept it open. We were like, you know, if you want to go, go. You know, that's great. She did apply while in high school. I think that's smart, and to defer, and she did defer. So she has a spot. She has a place to go when she's ready. But we held on to sending in that deferral letter until the very last minute, because I wanted to give her all the opportunity and thought time she needed to really settle on this. But she is a younger student. She's 17, actually, so she started school a little young. So that was also a part of it for her was, you know, I'm still a little younger than some of the kids going into college. I'm not going to be 18 till the late fall. So finally, you know, after a very, very brief moment, I mean, it wasn't long, but she, you know, just kind of announced to her father and I, this is right for me. I'm going. I want to go. And we were like, okay. And so we started in earnest contacting, you know, making our contacts with our family members in Europe. And we also had some family friends who are part of the Red Cross over there. So she's probably going to be helping out in the Red Cross over there. Again, we had a contact over there with working with the refugees, so she's probably going to be doing some of that while she's over there. But I do have to say it's difficult. It's a very difficult thing to do. It's not easy to find stuff. I mean, we had to work hard, even when we did look at some of the things you mentioned, like AmeriCorps and things like that. And those websites are great and helpful, but setting up the actual plan is not an easy process because there isn't a lot out there that's, you know, the high schools don't know about it or aren't really talking to you about it. And so you really do, like that your panel is saying, you have to do your research. You have to do your work. It's not as easy, and that's a hard process too, but it's not as easy as getting ready for college. I found getting the college, you know, going on the tours and getting the applications far easier than figuring out how to take a break and do it well.
Well, Jennifer, good luck to your family. Thanks for sharing your story with that. And sounds like there's been a lot of deliberation, a very thoughtful process. So thanks for taking the time to call the program and share it with us.
Oh, thank you. And I hope this comes up again, and maybe after her year, she can share what she learned.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. And Ethan Knight from the American Gap Association. Jennifer is somebody who they've been thinking about this for 5 years, and she still finds it difficult to kind of go through this process and find resources. So what's the message you'd want for Jennifer and all the families out there like hers, Ethan?
Come check out our website. I mean, in all honesty, that's exactly what we're here to do, is to try and both demystify the process, but also, you know, frankly, make it more a commonplace experience along the normal trajectory of a student's education. I mean, on our current website, we actually have a planning tool guide. It's a two-page document. It certainly can be revisited and developed further. But those are the kinds of resources that we're trying to create. Whether you choose to go with an organized program that's accredited, one that's not accredited, whether you choose to work with, there's a whole cadre of gap year consultants. So these are specialists who you would pay anywhere from $500 to $3,000, where they'll plan out with you and vet placements, vet options, vet opportunities. You know, whether you're a student who wants to, you know, dive down the well of being an artist in Paris, they have those kinds of connections and will make those placements for you. Or if you're looking for information on gap year deferral policies for colleges, we host those on our website from about 300 different colleges and are constantly investing time in the financial aid aspect of our webpage too. So whether it's a college like Warren Wilson College in North Carolina that gives you $16,000 at the end of your gap year once you matriculate onto college, or whether it's Florida State University who will give you $5,000 towards your gap year, or UNC Chapel Hill that will do the same except $7,500, or Hosteling International USA. They just announced 61 $2,000 scholarships to go on a gap year. The only prerequisite is that you have to have a passport. You don't even have to stay at hostels. They just really want students traveling. There's a ton of resources on our website, and please, if you have suggestions for areas that we can make new resources available, submit a contact us. We're happy to develop that because the idea here is to demystify it, get more students taking a gap year. I feel like I'm the Hair Club for Men guy. You know, not only did I found the organization, but I also benefited from a gap year, and so I'm just such a vocal advocate of it, having seen the effects on my own life and those of many students.
John Serafine and I are not the Hair Club for Men, guys.
No, we're not.
John's in studio. John's the lead counselor at Fairport High School. He's in studio with me along with Emma Milligan, who took a gap year herself and is telling us about her experiences. You're hearing Ethan Knight on the phone, the founder and executive director of the American Gap Association. And Heather Grasso is in our WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio Studios in Geneva. She is a school counselor at Geneva High School. Still other phone calls to get to. We're going to take our only brief break of the hour, come back to your phone calls. We have a question for our school counselors about how they are advising students when it comes to rising college costs and whether gap years factor in there. I'll hit that and more of your phone calls after this short break. Coming up in our second hour, Beyoncé's Lemonade is an album, yes, about betrayal, infidelity, reconciliation. But there are broader themes about the experience of the African-American woman in the United States of America. And next hour, we talk about the themes from the album and what we all can learn from it with our panel. Join the conversation on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's go down to Dansville. Rocky has been waiting. Go ahead, Rocky.
Oh, thank you for taking my call,
sure.
Evan. I would like to tip my hat to the counselors just for having an open mind. My wife and I run a gap year program up in the hills outside of Dansville, which combines kind of working with your hands. We teach the skilled trades and then a year of discernment. And I thought it was interesting, you know, both Bob and Emma and Jennifer, I think they brought up kind of the three things that a gap year, a healthy gap year, really offers. The first, I would say, is discernment. You know, taking a year, where is it that I want to go? And the second big component is experience. So much of our kind of, I think, our schools, both high school, college, it's so academic, so kind of in the head. And, man, when we expose young people to the gift of working with their hands, we do maple syrup, we garden. It's really fascinating to see their spirits just come alive and embrace experience, which I think I hear in, forgive me for the gap year student that's there, I hear the love of experience in her voice. And I really think that's a primary component in a gap year.
Well, Rocky, stay on the line for a second here. He was talking about Emma Milligan, a student who is a real hands-on sort of learner. And
yeah.
I'm wondering, Emma, do you hear what he's describing, and do you think life experience? Do you think education? Do you think possible career? Mm-hmm. I guess all of those things are valuable.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, I think the gap year is both a decompression time and a time to have new experiences that you don't typically get in a school environment. And I think that's why it is so valuable. And especially, I mean, I hear a lot of things, you know, in the conversation recently about the kind of the controlled gap year and the planned gap year and the gap year that has college credit towards it. And sometimes the most valuable experiences that you're going to get in the gap year is the stuff that you get no college credit for. It's the people who approach you, you know, and the opportunities that you get that lead you a different place in life than you were expecting, or give you an experience that you're never going to get maybe any kind of credit for, but it has such a valuable, it is so valuable to your life and
sure.
your experience.
And Rocky, to be clear here, what you're describing, you call it a gap year program, yes?
Yes, and I really want to commend Ethan also. It's interesting, you know, how hard it is for students to connect with gap years, but we find the same problem. You know, this is our fifth year into it. You know, locally, we get more kids from, you know, out of state than we do locally. We've presented to the Monroe County Guidance Counselors. And I think it's kind of a shifting, you know, mentality in counselors to not send 92% of your kids to college. And what about that kid that really needs that space? You know, gap year programs are desperate for people like Ethan because often we're so busy kind of running the program. You know, they're usually small. And the whole marketing aspect of it, how we connect, really gets lost and difficult. So I'm interested in making sure we connect, Ethan, before.
Sure.
Before long.
And Rocky, for our listeners who want to find you, are you guys online?
Yes, we are. Let me give you that information. Logom Landing, L-A-G-O-M. If they just Google that. Ironically, I'm not a very good computer guy. I'm the hands-on guy. My wife does all that computer stuff. So we're also kind of work to get kids, we call it an experience in the real and away from the virtual. But we're right, we're 45 minutes from Rochester, and feel free to check us out, as well as, you know, we would be, I think that whole reference of how do other students, what was their experience like, is probably, you know, your best indicator. But we sure would love to get more connected and more exposed. So again, thanks to Ethan, and thank you for the show.
Sure.
I just find it day in, day out. Our students love it. We're out here building the deck, and one way or another, we dial you in.
It's flattery will get you everywhere, Rocky. That's very nice of you. It's Logham Landing. Thank you, Rocky, and good luck to you guys and the students down there. Logham Landing, and just as an example, so that's something that you may have never heard of. My colleague from down the hall, Mona Segatola-Salami from Classical 91.5, she ran a note to me saying, the Eastman School does something that they call a gap year program. They call it an immersion program. They call it a gap program for musicians, and they're going to be doing their third year of it starting in September through May. And so if you actually go to the Eastman School of Music's webpage, there's an immersion section for a gap year for students age 17 years old and up, spending the entire academic calendar year basically immersing and working on music. And they call that a gap year program. So I think there is a lot more out there like this. But what I want to do is ask another listener's question, especially for the guidance counselors that came in. Mary wrote to the program, and Heather and John, essentially saying, she wants to know, are the school counselors, are we sending too many kids to college to begin with? You know, should we be sending less? Because Mary's email cites the fact that a lot of kids graduate with a lot of loan debt, and their graduation rates aren't great from higher ed institutions, four-year institutions. So some kids go to school. I say kids, they're adults now. They end up with loan debt. They don't graduate. And so, you know, not nothing. Experience is valuable, but you don't have a degree and you've got loan debt. Mary's simply asking, should we be taking more time to catch our breath before we send more kids, and should we send fewer kids? I'll start with you, John Serafine from Fairport.
Yeah, I don't know if I could say we're sending too many kids or we should send fewer kids. I don't know if you can quantify that at all. Do I think some kids go to college that probably shouldn't, or they don't look at other options? I do think that's the case. I think there's a lot of variables that go into, you know, should or should you not go off to college. I happen probably in the minority of people, and it might sound weird coming from a counseling background, but I'm not a huge believer that a 17-year-old high school kid has to know exactly what he or she's going to do the rest of his or her life. I think college is exploratory. I happen to be a huge fan of the liberal arts. I think, you know, the experience that goes with spending 4 years at college can be incredibly life-changing. I've seen it for my own kids that has played out that way. So I don't think you can say, are we sending too many, not enough? It's certainly an individual decision. I think this take a breath, gap year thing is a really nice opportunity for kids who are uncertain.
Okay. Heather Grasso, what do you think?
Sure. You know, college is an investment, and that's what I try to help my students understand, is that you are working toward your future goals. I just think it's important that they know their options. I know I said this before, but there's more than just a traditional four-year institution. There's training programs, there's apprenticeships, there's on-the-job trainings for skill sets, there's two-year technical degrees, and you name it. There's online programming. So students aren't limited just to the traditional college everyday routine. They can pick from so many different things, and I think that if they knew more about those options, that they would be able to make better decisions about what they want to do after high school.
Okay, and Ethan Knight from the American Gap Association, you might have heard John Serafine mention earlier the fact that there are studies that indicate students who take a gap year, and they may be sort of self-selecting. I mean, it's not a perfect metric, but the studies that have been done indicate that students who take a gap year and end up going to college have higher GPAs and higher graduation rates. So I guess the point, Ethan Knight, is that we're not telling students, you're not telling students to take a gap year to avoid college altogether.
No, I mean, you know, quite honestly, I think the idea here is, well, so the costs have gone up for college, and so I think families are evaluating bigger picture. where college plays in the overall landscape of their future. And so I think as students are looking at that and families are having more frank discussions, when I went to college, it was, you know, the story I was told, and this is longer ago than I care to share, but my parents were, you know, they said, don't worry about where you want to go. We'll figure out the finances. And frankly, I don't think that that's a conversation that families are having quite as much as they once did. You know, the value of college is coming into question more and more so, and I think that, that students just need to be made aware of the fact that there's more career paths in front of them than being a doctor, an accountant, an attorney, or a professional sports athlete. And if we did a better job of educating them, normalizing sort of what types of processes that sort of a student really could tap into, I mean, ultimately, I think one of the biggest things that I'm an advocate of is a student finding and creating their own definition of success. I regularly speak at high schools, and one of the things I'll ask is, what do you define as success? And inevitably, most students will gesticulate something around money. And ultimately, I think money is really a way to control your environment. The more money you have, the perception is the more control you have over your environment. And unfortunately, I think what most students are doing is they're enacting some other definition of success that's not their own, be it societies, medias, their peers, you know, their families, whatever they've seen. And the reality is that I think you will never be successful unless you are choosing your own definition of success to live by. So that's why I'm such an advocate of really taking this time. I like to call it time on. It's not time off, because what you really are doing, I like what the speaker said earlier, is sort of, you know, tapping into that inner sponge-like quality of curiosity again, because learning doesn't stop when you get your bachelor's degree. I mean, in many ways, shouldn't learning really be, like, shouldn't that be the beginning point of a lifelong interest in learning? I mean, that's what the goal really should be.
Well, Daniel emails the program, and he takes a little exception to some of the tone of the conversation, and I'll let you guys all sort of weigh in on this. Daniel says, these are adults we're talking about. These are not kids. My father-in-law went to war at the age of 16. Stop treating them like children. Emma Milligan, you had these conversations when you were 16, 17, 18, and Daniel's saying we're infantilizing the process.
I'd say infantilizing is a little harsh, but I do agree. Like, you know, I've been sitting here, and there's a lot of things that I do agree with that everybody is bringing to the table, but there's some things that make me cringe a little bit. You know, I mean, I think part of my gap year was me figuring things out on my own, and I had a lot of help from my parents, I had a lot of help from my family, but I didn't have controlled experiences. I didn't have a safe spot at a college when the year was over. Everything was mine to sort out and to experience, and I think that I benefited in a lot of ways from that, and I think other people could benefit in a lot of ways from different ways of doing it. But I would say that a little bit part of the value of the gap year is the unknowing and the unlearning and the, you know, taking that time to decompress from all of the control and the planning that you've put into your life for, you know, the 15 years or so that you've been educated, and figuring out something different.
Sure.
And that's, you know, it'll be different for every person.
And John Serafine, that dovetails nicely with what Bob and Menden, who called earlier, said, you know, jumped on a motorcycle and went across the country. I mean, you're kind of on your own there, and there's a lot to learn when you are more untethered, yes?
Absolutely. You know, and I think people still have the perception of that gap year as being some opportunity or experience that's defined for you and established for you. And I really do. I think the best gap year, I mean, you can have a fantastic gap year spent right here in Rochester. And I think the beauty of the gap year is you planning it yourself, you setting your goals, you deciding what you want to do. And there's certain ways to do it. I mean, you certainly can go through accreditation or accredited programs and do it that way. But I think the healthiest, most successful gap years are ones that kids plan out their own. They know what they want to accomplish. They know what they want to do. And it could be riding your motorcycle across country. It could be a variety of things.
Okay. Heather Grasso, what do you think?
You know, I agree. As long as you have your resources and your own plan and support and what you need, then go for it.
Okay. Ethan Knight, some final thoughts from you. And he's the founder and executive director of the American Gap Association. Down to our last minute. What do you want to make sure the audience understands about what you are doing, Ethan?
Well, leverage us for resources to move forward. And I guess my encouragement would be to look at our Planning Your Gap Year guide on our website, americangap.org. Leverage our financial aid resources, and please feel free to give me a call. It's one of the pieces I enjoy most is connecting with families about what their plans are. moving forward. I mean, the gap year changes lives. That's what it does.
Ethan, I got to imagine Malia Obama's decision and the headlines that it has generated has gotten your organization more attention, yes?
You have no idea, yes.
Good luck to you. I don't know if you're going to be giving out your phone call in perpetuity, but maybe for a little while longer. Thank you, Ethan. Thanks for taking
Thank
the time
again.
For the program. Ethan Knight's the founder and executive director of the American Gap Association. Our thanks to a couple of school counselors taking time. Heather Grasso from Geneva High School. And Heather, thanks for popping into our WEOS Finger Lakes Public Radio studios down there. Nice talking to you.
You too. Thanks for having me.
And John Serafine, lead counselor at Fairport High School. Great to see you again, John. Thanks for taking the time for us.
Thanks, Evan. I enjoyed it.
Nothing going on this time of year, right? I mean, it's a very busy spring and time of year. Emma Milligan, who is someone who took her own gap year and sharing her experience as well. Nice talking to you and good luck to you. Thank you, Emma.
Thank you, Evan.
All right, short break. We're talking Beyonce, Lemonade, and themes next hour.